Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's episode, Taylor Charleston will have a report about the sheer consequences of small leaks in irrigation systems. Additionally, Vicki Boyd investigates a company doing drone applications of predatory mites and other beneficial insects. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, kicking things off with regional ag news right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
California has a number of formal acts and statute. Food and Agricultural Code Division 1, Part 1, Chapter 3, Article 6 provides the Farmer Equity Act of 2017. There are several sections that are dedicated to this act. Section 511 contains seven legislative findings and declarations, including that California recognizes the importance of investing in the long-term prosperity of the food and farming system, starting with farmers. It is therefore the intent of the legislation that the Secretary should support socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers and include this support in the California Department of Food and Agriculture's vision and its relevant policies. Section 512 defines the following terms: secretary, socially disadvantaged farmer or rancher, socially disadvantaged group, and an urbanized area. And Section 513 requires the department to ensure the inclusion of socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers, including socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers in urbanized areas, in development, adoption, implementation, and enforcement of food and agricultural laws, regulations, and policies and programs. Also, the secretary is required to create a position within the department's executive office to support the efforts of this section. Section 514 requires the department to consult with the secretaries of California Environmental Protection Agency, the Natural Resources Agency, the Business Consumer Services and Housing Agency, and the California Health and Human Services Agency, and all other interested members of the public and private sectors of the state on opportunities for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers to coordinate state programs. In addition, the department is required to disseminate information regarding opportunities provided by, including but not limited to, the United States Department of Agriculture, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the General Accounting Office, the Office of Management and Budget, and other federal agencies for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. What will dictate the future of the produce industry? Three things, according to Philip Martin of the University of California at Davis, perhaps the nation's leading expert on farm labor. He says machines, migrant guest workers, and or imports, labor-saving mechanization replaces workers, mechanical aids make guest and U.S. workers more productive, and imports can substitute for some domestic production, he says. All of these variables center on the cost and availability of human labor. Migrant guest workers form the backbone of the industry's personnel, as they have for generations. He said the U.S. had a bracero program between 1942 and 1964 that peaked in size in the mid-1950s, when 20% of U.S. crop workers were braceros. He says braceros, or guest workers, from the Spanish word for strong arm or manual laborer, were initially introduced to make up for labor shortages caused by the Second World War. After the program ended, farm labor costs jumped as the United Farm Workers won 40% wage increases in table grape contracts. He said a wave of labor-saving mechanization and agricultural restructuring followed as oil companies and other conglomerates exited farming. Unauthorized Mexicans provided an ample supply of workers between the 1980s and the 2008 to 2009 recession, and reliance on farm labor contractors rose. Over the past decades, farm employers, despite complaints, relied more on the H-2A guest worker program. He says H-2A remains concentrated in the southeastern states, but he said the H-2A program is expanding fastest in the Pacific West Coast states of California, Oregon, and Washington, the three states with half of U.S. crop workers, the highest adverse effect wage rates, and extensive state laws on farm workers. One provision of the H-2A program that remains unpopular among growers is a requirement to provide housing for workers. Martin points out that today, farm labor contractors account for almost half of H-2A job certifications. Many farmers want Congress to allow them to pay a housing allowance of $1 to $2 per hour to H-2As rather than provide housing. Even if you pay a worker an extra $2 an hour, that would amount to $16 for an 8-hour day, one-third less than a present average cost of housing. The other two factors mentioned by Martin are also explained by labor costs and availability, mechanization to reduce the need for it, and imports from nations whose average wages are much lower than the United States. The net effect of these changes is to require more investment for fruit, vegetable, and horticulture production, according to Martin. The question here is where to invest: in machines and farming systems to replace and or make workers more productive, housing for H-2A workers, or production in lower wage countries. He says the answer is to invest in some of each until technological breakthroughs and migration and trade policies come into focus. Admittedly, the produce industry faces heavy pressure from other factors, including climate change, urbanization, and water shortages. However, it deals with these issues. The solution won't be complete without solving the labor dilemma. Pecan Nation, leading the emergence of farm fresh pecans into the $5.1 billion snacking nuts category, recently won a prestigious 2022 Most Innovative New Product Award from the National Confectioners Association for its cinnamon roasted pecans. They were up against some serious competition, including from some global snacking conglomerates, so it's really quite an honor, according to Nick Quast, Vice President of Sales for Pecan Nation. He says consumers are gravitating to healthier snacks, and their full line of conveniently packaged healthy snacking pecans has proven to be a big year-round seller, especially throughout the South and Southeast. From growing to shelling to flavoring and packaging, Pecan Nation is vertically integrated and was founded by fifth-generation peach and pecan family farmers who annually harvest over 30 million pounds of pecans grown on over 7,000 acres in the fertile red clay soil of central Georgia. Pecans are the only nut native to North America, and some trees in Pecan Nation's orchards were planted over 75 years ago, which provides a great story for consumers who are interested in where their food comes from. Pecans are antioxidant-rich and a good source of dietary fiber, healthy fats, and protein. Pecans are leading the way in savory snacks as more consumers are gravitating to high-protein, low-carbohydrate diets. In 2021, when the overall snacking nut category grew by a respectable 2.9%, pecan sales grew by an astounding 21.1%. In addition to award-winning cinnamon flavor, Pecan Nation pecans are currently available in Sneaky Heat, Gingerbread, Maple Crumbles, Roasted and Salted, and Natural, with more flavors under development.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Taylor Chalstrom joins us with a report now on small leaks in irrigation systems.
A single bad gasket in a filter releasing just a drop at a time can waste thousands of gallons of water over an irrigation season. Gains in irrigation efficiency are offset when leaks in the system are not addressed, and maintenance of the system is key. Tehama County Resource Conservation District's Mobile Irrigation Lab Manager Kevin Greer noted that punctures in irrigation hoses caused by vertebrate pests tend to get more attention, but there are other areas where leaks can cause excessive water loss.
They occur, say, typically in three different locations. One is at the pump, where you have components pieced together, where you have filters attached to main lines, attached to valves going out from the pumping plant. So pumping plants are an area where I regularly have been focusing on collecting leak information, because typically those can be pretty easy to fix on some systems where, say, it's an older screen where it just needs a gasket. I should rephrase that because some of that stuff is actually up here is a little bit old and out of date, and finding the gaskets can kind of be a challenge. But they are a source of leaking that we've been collecting flow information from, and it's kind of shocking the amount of water that we can catch in a 1 minute sample and show what looks like a kind of insignificant amount of water actually adds up to quite a bit, especially when systems are being run for 24 hours once or twice per week. And you talk about 10, 15, 20 cycles of 24 hours over the course of an irrigation season, those can really add up. So that's the first spot. The second spot is especially out on microsystems, on micro drip and micro sprinklers, where the inlet tees are. So at those inlet tees, there can be a lot of connection points. The drip line connected into the tee connected into a lot of times a pressure regulator connected into a shutoff valve, and then that shutoff valve connected into the hose line that goes down into the sub main or main or main line. So with so many different components there, that is a area where we've really been finding a lot of leaks, and with the help of the Almond Board of California and Tom Duvall, we've kind of been focusing and digging out some of those areas and putting catch cups under there and catching that water where it also looks like, not a significant amount of water, but when added up, they can really equal a lot of water over the course of a season. And then the third location is along those drip and sprinkler lines, which typically are two things: animal bites, which are pretty obvious, and I know growers constantly battle those, and have most of people have crews that go up and down the rows and fix those every time they get turned on, and it's a nonstop fight. But also the locations where micro sprinklers are connected into that line, so the spaghetti line connection from the sprinkler into the hose line over time, the heat of the summer here and the coolness of the winter can really cause some wear and tear and start to make those connections looser. So those are the three main places where leaking is happening.
Greer, who analyzes growers' irrigation systems through the mobile irrigation lab, said that typically growers are quite surprised to see how much water they're actually losing from these smaller leaks.
It's a pretty common reaction of, wow, I didn't realize that it was that much water, because sometimes it can just kind of sit in a small pool, and then if they've got good enough soil, it just absorbs into the soil and kind of goes down. So it doesn't make a huge mess. With clay soils, it might be a little more obvious where it's sitting there and it's actually running off, and you've got water trickling down a ditch on the side of the road or something. But they typically are pretty shocked at how much water that small leak can add up to be over the course of a year.
Having an irrigation system maintenance checklist at the pump and in the field might be beneficial to the grower when analyzing smaller leaks. From Almond Board of California, at the pump they advise to check the pump flow rate and pressure, repair leaks at the pump station, service pumps and oilers, service the pump electrical panel, review and verify filter controller flush times, and service filters for leaks and media condition. In the field, they recommend flushing main and sub mains, flushing irrigation laterals and hoses, servicing air vents, repairing leaking riser tees, spot checking irrigation line pressures, and replacing broken or worn sprinkler nozzles and spaghetti hose. At the end of the day, though, Greer says growers just need to be aware of how detrimental the smaller leaks are, and if they see one, to repair it immediately.
Just trying to get growers to recognize that connection of what looks insignificant to it really isn't. So I think growers are already out there looking at systems. Most growers I see have crews that go up and down the rows every time because those micro sprinklers nozzles plug up pretty easily. So their crews are out there opening them up and cleaning them out, and making repairs, especially with animal bites and animal damage. Sometimes those bites can be pretty large, and so that can make a pretty big mess in an orchard, especially if they're shooting down into the soil where they can be eroding little holes and moving that soil around. So I think growers are paying attention. I think what we're really trying to focus on is just trying to bring that awareness of how much water that can really add up to be. Hopefully growers are getting that point and understanding how quickly it adds up. But I think they are already checking those systems. It's just trying to connect the severity of the problem with actually doing something and taking care of it.
Greer encourages any grower looking for a quick check on their irrigation system to reach out to their local RCD's mobile irrigation lab. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Take advantage of early bird pricing for only $175. Price goes up after July 31st. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says the administration's Inflation Reduction Act will have a meaningful impact on America's rural and agriculture communities. He says agriculture is at the forefront of the fight against climate change, from climate-smart agriculture to supporting healthy forests and conservation to tax credits to biofuels, infrastructure, and beyond. This agreement gives USDA significant additional resources. House Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow says the act contains almost $40 billion to tackle the climate crisis, lower costs, and create good-paying jobs by investing in agriculture, forestry, and rural communities. Over $20 billion is set aside for the tools farmers and ranchers need to help address the climate. Those funds will help incentivize sustainable practices like optimizing fertilizer use and expanding cover crops. $14 billion will help lower costs for families and support good-paying clean energy jobs in rural communities. It is critical that Congress act quickly on this legislation, according to Vilsack. The prospects of Ukraine moving ag commodities through Black Sea ports appeared more positive as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has visited a pivotal port in Odessa and a major insurance underwriter agreed to cover ships moving grain out of Ukrainian ports. The grain deal was signed last week in Turkey. It requires ships to be monitored by a joint coordination center, including Ukrainian, Russian, and United Nations officials. No attacks are allowed onto ships, and the Russian Navy is not allowed to escort ships. Russian representatives also are not allowed at the Ukrainian ports. If the ports are open, countries will get the food they need, and a lot of people will manage to survive, and it will help political stability for the countries that depend on the food, according to Roman Gershon, a Ukrainian agricultural tour guide who has been traveling the U.S. to advocate for rebuilding destroyed Ukrainian farms. President Joe Biden's pick to be the next chief ag negotiator says if confirmed, he'll engage with China to step up its production of fertilizer ingredients as farm input costs here soar. Doug McCallop says farm input inflation will be a top priority of his if he is confirmed.
These are times of tremendous opportunity in international trade. But if the bills that farmers have to pay for their inputs negate those gains, we will have missed an opportunity.
Aside from Russia, McCallop says China is another big producer of fertilizer ingredients.
China, for example, has shut down exports of urea and other nitrate-based materials that are used in the manufacturing of fertilizer. So if confirmed, I would want to work directly engage with my Chinese counterparts to see how we can open up the flow of key inputs and minerals that can be used here at home for the manufacture of fertilizer.
Texas A&M's Ag and Food Policy Center reported early in the year that record fertilizer prices could increase another 80% this year. The Ukraine-Russia conflict has led to supply shortages with both nations' major producers of ag commodities and inputs. Russia alone accounts for 23% of global ammonia exports, 14% of urea, 21% for potash, and 10% for processed phosphates. Some USDA risk management and disaster programs are utilizing existing data to create pre-populated application forms for qualifying producers. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
One aspect of USDA's emergency relief program and its application process is pre-populated forms based on Agriculture Department and crop insurance data. Those forms were mailed to qualifying producers this past May. And now, according to Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau,
another part of phase one is taking additional information that we have for other producers within the Non-Insured Disaster Assistance Program, or NAP, and doing the same approach with them.
NAP covered producers suffering a qualifying loss in 2021 are now receiving pre-filled applications in the mail.
They will have to sign it, agree to carry the similar coverage for the next 2 years, and they too will receive a payment in their mailbox or their direct deposit account in just a few days.
He adds producers qualifying for other USDA risk management programs will receive pre-populated forms sometime in August. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Now is the time to fill your fuel tanks and get your diesel needs secured for fall. That's the word from Jason Schwantz, the Senior Vice President of Refined Fuels at CHS. He says prices will hike back up come fall, and fuel inventory is still not back to pre-pandemic levels. He explains why we've been experiencing whiplash in fuel prices from record lows during COVID to record highs a few months ago.
One of the biggest factors is lack of refining capacity in the United States. When the pandemic hit, about 1,000 barrels a day of refining capacity was pulled out of the market, either financially couldn't make it, converted to renewable diesel, still trying to figure out what to do. On top of that, you had low diesel fuel supplies because of COVID. Nothing was going on. Supplies were lower. We didn't have enough refining capacity in there. There is inflation, but people are still using diesel fuel. And we're just not able to get caught up because of that lack of refining that we have in the United States. There's increased trucking demand. This has caused a lot of problems because there's just not enough trucks out there to get things where they go. You have the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Europe began to pivot away from Russian-based fuel, which provided about 7% of the world's refining capacity. And 60% of that went to Europe, and they're trying to pivot away from Russia because of that. That also caused an increased demand for U.S. exports, and refiners are incentivized to sell some of that used fuel over to Europe because it can forego a RIN, which is the Renewable Fuel Standards Compliance, so they can make more money doing that.
Schwantz explains how the push from the Biden administration for clean energy like electric vehicles and biofuels is playing a role in this. He says while EVs are picking up on the coast, demand is stronger for ethanol and renewable fuels in the Midwest.
There has been an increase in the use of renewables, and you have this push to renewable diesel. But part of the issue with that is it needs what we call an LCFS credit. It's the California credit, along with the bio credit, in order to make it work. So while that helps California maybe get more product, it also raises the price of California product because that product is a lot higher in cost. Now, we are seeing an incentive to use more ethanol, and we're seeing an uptick in ethanol. Yes, you're seeing some more electric cars out there, but quite frankly, that's on the coast. We're not seeing the growth in electric cars in what I'll call that central United States, probably the big ag sector. But all of this is kind of leading to, and the high prices are leading to less gas demand. We're seeing a tick down in demand here, and I'm sure it's mostly due to the prices. On the same token, diesel fuel prices are high, but we're not seeing a downtick in the diesel fuel usage, which is usually a good sign that the economy is still chugging along despite the high inflation.
Schwantz says now is the time to fill up your fuel tanks and get your diesel needs secured for fall because diesel fuel inventories are low. And another issue is hurricanes. More than a third of the U.S. refining capacity is in the Gulf, and hurricane season begins in October. Any disasters there can also make a big impact on prices during your critical harvest period.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission. Supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Vicki Boyd is in now. She investigates a company doing drone applications of predatory mites and other beneficial insects.
A single bad gasket in a filter releasing just a drop at a time can waste thousands of gallons of water over an irrigation season. Gains in irrigation efficiency are offset when leaks in the system are not addressed, and maintenance of the system is key. Tehama County Resource Conservation District's Mobile Irrigation Lab Manager Kevin Greer noted that punctures in irrigation hoses caused by vertebrate pests tend to get more attention, but there are other areas where leaks can cause excessive water loss.
They occur say typically in three different locations. One is at the pump where you have components pieced together, where you have filters attached to main lines, attached to valves going out from the pumping plant. So pumping plants are an area where I regularly have been focusing on collecting leak information, because typically those can be pretty easy to fix on some systems where, say, it's an older screen where it just needs a gasket. I should rephrase that, because some of that stuff is actually up here is a little bit old and out of date, and finding the gaskets can kind of be a challenge. But they are a source of leaking that we've been collecting flow information from, and it's kind of shocking the amount of water that we can catch in a 1 minute sample and show what looks like a kind of insignificant amount of water actually adds up to quite a bit, especially when systems are being run for 24 hours once or twice per week. And you talk about 10, 15, 20 cycles of 24 hours over the course of an irrigation season, those can really add up. So that's the first spot. The second spot is, especially out on micro systems, on micro drip and micro sprinklers, where the inlet tees are. So at those inlet tees, there can be a lot of connection points. The drip line connected into the tee connected into a lot of times a pressure regulator connected into a shutoff valve, and then that shutoff valve connected into the hose line that goes down into the sub main or main or main line. So with so many different components there, that is an area where we've really been finding a lot of leaks, and with the help of the Almond Board of California and Tom Duvall, we've kind of been focusing and digging out some of those areas and putting catch cups under there and catching that water, where it also looks like, you know, not a significant amount of water, but when added up, they can really equal a lot of water over the course of the season. And then the third location is along those drip and sprinkler lines, which typically are two things: animal bites, which are pretty obvious, and I know growers constantly battle those, and have most of people have crews that go up and down the rows and fix those every time they get turned on, and it's a nonstop fight. But also the locations where micro sprinklers are connected into that line. So the spaghetti line connection from the sprinkler into the hose line over time, the heat of the summer here and the coolness of the winter can really cause some wear and tear and start to make those connections looser. So those are the three main places where leaking is happening.
Greer, who analyzes growers' irrigation systems through the mobile irrigation lab, said that typically growers are quite surprised to see how much water they're actually losing from these smaller leaks.
It's a pretty common reaction of, wow, I didn't realize that it was that much water, because sometimes it can just kind of sit in a small pool, and then if they've got good enough soil, it just absorbs into the soil and kind of goes down. So it doesn't make a huge mess. With clay soils, it might be a little more obvious where it's sitting there and it's actually running off and you've got water trickling down a ditch on the side of the road or something. But they typically are pretty shocked at how much water that small leak can add up to be over the course of a year.
Having an irrigation system maintenance checklist at the pump and in the field might be beneficial to the grower when analyzing smaller leaks. From Almond Board of California, at the pump they advise to check the pump flow rate and pressure, repair leaks at the pump station, service pumps and oilers, service the pump electrical panel, review and verify filter controller flush times, and service filters for leaks and media condition. In the field, they recommend flushing main and submains, flushing irrigation laterals and hoses, servicing air vents, repairing leaking riser tees, spot checking irrigation line pressures, and replacing broken or worn sprinkler nozzles and spaghetti hose. At the end of the day, though, Greer says growers just need to be aware of how detrimental the smaller leaks are, and if they see one, to repair it immediately.
Just trying to get growers to recognize that connection of what looks insignificant to it really isn't. So I think growers are already out there looking at systems. You know, most growers I see have crews that go up and down the rows every time, because those micro sprinklers nozzles plug up pretty easily. So their crews are out there opening them up and cleaning them out and making repairs, especially with animal bites and animal damage. Sometimes those bites can be pretty large. And so that can make a pretty big mess in an orchard, especially if they're shooting down into the soil where they can be eroding little holes and moving that soil around. So I think growers are paying attention. I think what we're really trying to focus on is just trying to bring that awareness of how much water that can really add up to be. Hopefully growers are getting that point and understanding how quickly it adds up. But I think they are already checking those systems. It's just trying to connect the severity of the problem with actually doing something and taking care of it.
Greer encourages any grower looking for a quick check on their irrigation system to reach out to their local RCD's mobile irrigation lab. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.